shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Yes, hi.
I'm Donald.
I'm Dill.
And I feel like we never introduce the concept of the show. This is a show where once every 2 weeks, Dill and I sit down and we review 4 or 5 new albums that came out during the week, and we look back at one old one. It's a pretty simple concept.
Yeah, the concept is not our names alone, it's...
No, it's not. No. The concept is bigger than us. No, but it's that's what it is. If you want to figure out what to listen to that came out this week, this is the show. Including the albums that we're going to be talking about this week are Tycho, Sam Sparrow, Vasa, and then we're also going to take a look back at The Way of All Flesh by Gojira as part of our Road to Sunstroke segment. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be a very interesting conversation because that was a band that I definitely knew of more than I knew, I would say.
Same.
Yeah.
I think we're both in that boat.
Okay.
Rocking it.
And then partly it was the album I knew kind of the least of the latter day Gojira stuff. So I think it was a really worthwhile exercise, as we will discuss. Dill, have you any news and updates for our dear listeners before we kick into the reviews?
No music stuff really.
Okay.
Besides Lady Gaga's back. That's a big thing.
Lady Gaga's back and she's
a game changer.
It's the Gaga that I enjoy.
Yeah.
I would say is
most
back.
People would like to think of that era.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, even my girlfriend, who's a huge Joanne fan, I mean, for the last 3 years.
I'm not knocking it. It's a different slice of the gag.
It certainly is. It just wouldn't be the slice that I would necessarily reach for. But for the last 3 years, every year she'd say, oh, what's your album of the year? I'd say, what's this? And what's your album of the year? Oh, it's Joanne by Lady Gaga. Again. I'm like, okay. She was trepidatious when I said, okay, this new Gaga doesn't sound like Joanne. She was like, okay. And got on board immediately, as everybody should. I mean, that bass line is undeniable.
It's 3 minutes in and out, you're done. Hope there's an album. There is, but yeah.
Do we have a release date? No.
April 10th. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Snap. Mm-hmm. Okay, so...
Very soon.
You can rest assured we will be covering that.
Did you see that video online of the... it came on during a coronavirus conference with I think it was the French government or somebody.
Lady Gaga?
Yeah, somebody's ringtone was that song.
Oh my god, no.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, Fear Inoculum would be the second best choice for something to show up during that.
Yeah, god, it's funny, huh? Fear Inoculum, and I feel like that's what we all need right now with the way the coronavirus is whipping through the population.
I don't know if there's another joke. I think it was... hopefully it's not a joke, but... I think somebody had the virus during a Tool concert.
No.
Yeah, I don't know if that was just a joke.
Okay.
Because that would be just so completely, not ironic, but on the nose.
Yeah, it certainly would. I mean, this is progressing from something of a punchline to becoming a real, you know, global epidemic. So, yeah, we just got to keep our eye on the situation. Mm-hmm. This isn't a virus podcast, but
no.
It's something that's affecting everybody. And South by Southwest was cancelled.
No.
Which does affect
music.
It does connect to music.
Gigs cancelled. That also connects.
So I'm really hoping that a couple of the gigs that we have coming up don't.
Yeah.
I'd imagine anything with fewer than 1,000 people won't be affected. I mean, I work in the arts industry, but you know, we're monitoring the situation, but right now we're certainly not at the level where any gathering of people is a threat. It's certainly not at that level in Ireland yet, so I guess we'll just have to keep our eye on things.
Yeah, and one more quick word before we start gigs.
Oh, fire ahead.
You brought me to a really shit movie.
I would argue that it was a really fun movie, but sure.
And most people would try to claim Nicolas Cage movies are of that.
Well, I think the prevailing opinion on the movie is that it's kind of trashy, but it's fun.
This is Color Out of Space.
The
H.P. Lovecraft, I guess, adaptation.
Right.
Yeah. I accidentally angered a possibly really passionate fan about it.
Oh.
Online. It was
my first ever
YouTube, one of my YouTube comments. I just kind of post about this film really ain't that all that bag of chips. They're like, watch your fucking mouth. It was totally on the ball. I was like, I think he responded like, did you read it? I was like, yeah, I did read it before. So that was his comeback.
I haven't read it, but I from what I've heard, there weren't that many alpacas. I don't think anybody milks alpacas in the book.
No. animals do get quite fucked up by the illness, but yeah.
I mean, some reviews I saw described it as like sort of being authentic to Lovecraft, and that just doesn't seem right to me. It was a very schlocky B-cult type movie.
Yeah, well, most Lovecraft is, which begs me to think, do
it's
I even,
schlocky, though?
Do I even like Lovecraft in the first place?
Yeah.
But,
supposedly, not the nicest of dudes.
I don't think it... Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Back in the day, but... and today, especially.
Right.
I don't think it did enough to break itself out from the old one.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's interesting.
They are stories from the 50s. Like that era of story writing, which is used to come a long way to...
Well, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, there are other adaptations of that book that I presume take themselves a bit more seriously than Nicolas Cage saying, the alpacas need to be in the barn by 10.
Yeah, that was not in the script.
Really, it was improv.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. But no, in all seriousness, go see it yourself. This isn't the movie podcast, but, you know, Color Out of Space. Clearly, we were a little bit divided on it. I had a great time. I think Dil was silently seething.
I think you saw
rage.
Me just
yeah.
put my hands in
yeah.
to my face.
He kept on
times.
Trying to do the side eye, and I'd just be like, I'm having a great time.
Oh.
So your mileage may vary. And last thing before we kick into the reviews, I just want to give a special shout out, because I only heard about this yesterday, maybe the day before. But it's probably not at the point where we could really cover it on the show officially, but Erwin Sparks from The Hoosiers, who you'll remember, Goodbye Mr. A, Cops and Robbers, what's the other song? Worried About Ray, right?
Sure.
I was big into them back in the day, whatever.
I know.
People thought they were kind of a bit cheeseball, but I always really liked them and stuck with them through maybe 3 albums out of 4, but they've been gone for a long time. They're doing like 10-year anniversary stuff right now. Anyway, Erwin the singer has a new project that he hasn't tied to the old band in any way. He's, you know, there's no even mention of the Hoosiers on any of the promotional materials, but it's called Whitetail Falls, and it's just this beautiful, expansive, sort of atmospheric, dark folk music that, you know, has
unusual
his,
for a writer of Goodbye Mr. A and such.
You, but actually,
indie hitters,
if you listen
right?
to the records, you'd be surprised. It's not a million miles away from when they do acoustic stuff. Like, it's very finger-picked guitar, like fingerstyle guitar, and like strings, like organic strings. It's really, really nice. He's released sort of 3 tracks plus a couple of remixes. But if that sounds like your bag, if you just want to kind of let everything wash away, Whitetail Falls, definitely recommend it.
Perhaps not in my bag, my wheelhouse.
Check it out, though.
But I'm curious.
Yeah. No prior interest one way or the other in that band required. I understand they're a little bit of a pop music footnote, mm-hmm. as The Simpsons would say. But it's good stuff. Okay, I think that's enough preamble. We're going to kick off with the album reviews. The first one I would like to start with, speaking of curious pop music from around 2007-2008, the first album is Boombox Eternal by Sam Sparrow, otherwise known as Samuel Folsom. Australian singer-songwriter, sort of born in Sydney, spent his teenage years in LA, then moved back to Sydney, and then kind of spends his time between the two cities. Sam Sparrow, you will probably know from his single Black and Gold.
A lot of people who don't know him.
Man fall out of the sky. Right, you know, everybody knows that song. It was a huge international radio smasher. It was in, you know, you name it. It was in ads. It was in the FIFA games. It was in everybody's homes at one point. And I got to say, I to this day, I've actually never tired of Black and Gold. I think it's a real electropop gem. But I suppose...
I mean, just overplayed,
yeah,
right?
I suppose it is a little bit overplayed.
I haven't listened to it in 8 or so years, and it's even better than I left it off to be.
Yeah, right. I think maybe at the time it certainly was overplayed, but then it sort of dropped off into that void of, like, I feel like a lot of huge hit singles from around that time sort of did drop off radio airplay. They didn't quite have the sticking power of songs from, say, like the early 2000s. So yeah, and then he had 2 follow-up singles, 21st Century Life and Pocket, both of which I think are fantastic.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, and right. Do you know the first album at all? Sam Sparrow, the self-titled?
I know the later ones a bit more, actually.
Oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. So this is the Boombox Eternal is his 3rd album. So Sam Sparrow is definitely a game of 3 halves as such. Most people know him just for that single, but I think it's from an album that is...
He's a whole lot more than just that.
Yeah, right? It's a whole lot more than just that. He wrote it with... I think it was mostly produced by Paul Epworth, who worked with, like... Maximo Park and a lot of other, like, I think like maybe Adele and Amy Winehouse, like big name. And he co-wrote a lot of it with this guy called Jesse Rog. I think that's what gave it that shimmering electropop edge, which even though it worked well on that record, I think you got much more of a sense of who Sam Sparrow was on his second record, Return to Paradise, which is totally mid to late 70s disco, mm-hmm. like start to finish, like all the way from the strings to the brass.
Definitely
to the
going
guitar.
For something he really likes.
Yes.
Like that really gets down to the nitty gritty of who he is. Instead of
absolutely
a person going into modern pop, right?
Yeah, right. Which has its, like, you know, which is much more tug and cheek. I mean, the songs like Recycle It, which is this kind of like dumb listing off of things you can recycle, or, you know, Cottonmouth, which is like they were kind of silly little pop songs. They were great pop songs, but Return to Paradise felt much more like somebody bearing their soul in a way, and it was just this super organic, really, like, it felt quite big budget, mm-hmm. in a like late 70s early 80s kind of way. And that leads us on to Boombox Eternal. So already we've got an artist that is much more nuanced and much deeper than I think most people would give him credit for, and that sounds nothing like his quote unquote one hit wonder. And then we bring it to Boombox Eternal. What would you say are the range of influences that are on show here, because I feel like they're completely different from the first and the second
record. Late 80s, early 90s, just Prince at his best, of course Janet Jackson,
yes,
is a given.
Yeah.
There's a whole load of that era,
yeah, like George Michael, Phil Collins as well, I think. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Prince and the other Jackson as well, who I am slightly reticent, but I mean you can't deny it. But there's a lot of Michael on this, you know, but he's we don't talk about him anymore, but that's your personal choice, but I mean I'm personally, I'm done with that artist. But you know, you've got like some more color, like sunburst pop as well, Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, all that good stuff. I just think it's basically him, and you hear it on Vibe Forever, the intro track. You hear him like lie back in his bed, pops his headphones on and pushes play on his little tape Walkman, and you hear the tape hiss,
yes,
come in. And that's what this is a love letter to the era of the golden age of the tape, which would have been the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. In a very meticulous sense. I don't think anything is really left out of that.
No.
Audio pool, I guess, of what they pulled out of, like, the sound of the drums.
Oh, everything, God, yeah.
Everything's just meticulous.
Yeah.
Right?
It's, and I believe, just reading up on this, I believe that nearly everything that you hear is, it's not trickery as such. He did his best to seek out all of the original equipment.
Yeah, research, right?
That
totally shows.
Yeah, like,
artist, it would totally show, right?
Oh no, it would, because it would sound like a pastiche. This sounds like it's the difference between pastiche and homage. Like, this sounds like a genuine. This sounds like it was really written by somebody with a deep, like, love and respect and reverence for the music that they are drawing from, and they want to add to that canon. And I think what he has done here is, like, he has created an album, almost like a masterpiece within a genre that, because it was just slightly too early for me, I don't have like a deep emotional connection to. Because Sam Sparrow would have been an 80s kid, yes, as opposed to, like, you know, you or I. Like, when we started becoming aware of music, the time that we would be emotionally connected to would probably be more from like kind of like 98, 99 through, yeah, like 2005, 2006.
Although I'm slowly indoctrinated into being an 80s kid somewhat.
Yeah.
Just by virtue of nostalgia, right?
Right. But, I mean, there's no denying some of the songs on here, right?
No. I'd almost say every last song. Every last song is completely incredible.
Oh, great. Yes. Okay, so it's like a slam dunk for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was instantaneous, right?
Not totally instantaneous, but certain songs, absolutely,
yeah,
yes. But
I mean, you know, it plays the ballady 80s world as well as it does the real grooving bop. Right,
yeah.
The uplift as well as the low lift.
Yeah, the like Eye to Eye particularly and Save a Life are both very much in that kind of slinky R&B meets like a scene where a character is holding a boombox in the rain kind of ballad type thing. Maybe Dustin Hoffman, who knows. And then like you're right, it does absolutely slap at points. Like, I think, you know, Pressure has that fantastic sort of jazzy flute in the chorus.
Oh,
and
yeah. That just comes in. A real cool touch, dude.
Fantastic.
That's very Phil Collins, right?
Yes. Yeah. A Marvelous Lover, I think it bleeds into that as well. That feel of like, it's just, you know, when pop was on a complete sugar rush. It's fantastic. The bass line and everything as well. That I don't know what instrument that is. It's a synth of some description.
It is a synth, but some of the actual bass in this, I'm imagining there is actual bass, right?
I think it's a combination. Certainly not as organic as Return to Paradise. I think it's a combination of like the Fraser synth, like that kind of slap bass keyboard. Yeah. But I'm sure there's plenty of like of acoustic bass as well.
It really seems like the synth is playing just under the bass, exactly the same notes, right?
That could be
an actual technique to make it sound a lot more full, right?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of references that I don't necessarily get, to be honest with you. Like, I do feel in my gut that Bow is probably a Prince style track, but I don't know Prince well enough to make that assertion with any kind of confidence. But definitely just the vocal chopping and changing and the kind of like all that, that feels like it probably is Prince, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is.
Okay, good to know. For me, weirdly, right, the best track, and I think there's some fantastic, I think, like, I love Pressure and I love Marvelous Lover and stuff, but I think The People, which is the track that most harkens back to his debut, is probably my favorite track. It's got somebody called Maluka, who co-wrote the track and appears on it, and she's a sort of an electronic producer, which makes sense, because I think that track definitely has more of a 90s house kind of throb to it, and it feels like an actual block party, not the band, but an actual party on the block.
For me, it feels a little more of the more modern ones.
Yes, right? Definitely.
To its detriment, I would say. Sort of. I mean, I do prefer the other ones.
See, yeah, I just, you know what, clinched it for me?
Sticks to it a bit more. What?
It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't exactly fit in. This is like, if the rest of them are sort of on average 91, I'd say The People is probably like 96, but it's those rolling house pianos that you weren't so keen on in the Tame Impala, that the Tame Impala record had loads of them, and I'm such a sucker for that sound.
The Tame Impala record is pales in comparison to what this guy can pull off, right?
I don't think there's much of a comparison to be made.
Well, I think this feels genuine, right? Genuine to what he's trying to do.
Yeah, you're fighting a losing battle if you're trying to get me to shit on the Tame Impala record. This feels super genuine. Mm-hmm. And as well, we have to talk about
very modern lyrical
stuff,
as opposed to stuff that would be said during the time in which he's...
Lyrically speaking, I think Sam Sparrow has a really interesting perspective. He's a gay man, and that was something that was de-emphasized a little bit. It's interesting because in the UK and Australia, it was just sort of a normal, like, it's just totally accepted, everybody knew, and it wasn't an issue. Whereas apparently his US label sort of said, oh well, actually people don't realize that over here, maybe you could slightly de-emphasize that. And I know that was a very strange and difficult time for him, and he has gone through substance abuse issues, and there's a reason why, you know, his first record came out in 08, his second record came out in 2012, and here we are in 2020, 8 years later, and we're only talking about his third album. So you know, he's gone through some personal struggles, but I think he does manage to dilute what is it, you know, what is probably a very complex range of emotions into stuff that feels like it's universal, but it's not cliche, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's very adept at that, I think.
Yeah.
But the thing that I really need to point out, and I think it runs across all of his work, even the stuff that I'm not super keen on, which would include a lot of the Quantum Physical EPs that came out in the interim period. He wasn't quite ready to tackle an album, so he did 3 EPs. I don't think they're his best work, but he's always had this incredible voice, and I think his voice on this just sounds better than ever, almost. Such a unique, and it's so deep and boomy and full, but then at the same time he can really belt, he can bring it down.
He knows how to write melodies extremely well and go through them. Like, he doesn't just half-ass melodies. He brings it beyond what they are.
Like, Sam Sparrow is like the definition of an artist where you can listen to a 3-second snippet from any song and immediately go, oh yeah, it's him. And that's an artist who plays with different genres on every record, but because his voice is so unique, I think he's just so talented. Yeah. You know, you can always say, oh yeah, that's Sam Sparrow.
Or you may mix it up with like Controversy era Prince.
Well, you see, that's the thing, I guess.
In a good way.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. And particularly, I suppose, when he's doing a Prince-style track, maybe.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I mean, again, like, I guess maybe I'm coming from this from a place of ignorance insofar as, like, I don't really know this genre as well as maybe I should. But
I see you'd love it.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to the Batman soundtrack, and that was a trip, if nothing else.
Janet Jackson's discography, just sweep through it, and it's all fucking kick-ass.
It's all good, right?
Yeah, mostly, yeah.
He has been talking about Janet Jackson a lot on this press junket, so I think she's definitely an influence. But, you know, I definitely hear, like, slightly later, but maybe early Destiny's Child on this at points. And just, you know, just there's lots to love here. But I gotta say, like I said, it's... At points, I maybe admire it more than I love it, just because it's not necessarily a style of music that I'm as passionate about as the style of his first two records. But I think for what he's set out to achieve, he has absolutely achieved it, and then some.
Yeah, it's a lot more interesting, I think. Like it tackles the ballady stuff really well. I know.
Particularly Save a Life, I think, is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that one definitely has kind of a dark tint to it.
It does.
The lyrics pertaining to himself, I am sure.
Yeah.
But with a positive edge. This all has a very, very positive, forward-thinking edge to his life.
Yeah, I think
I know he battled with addiction and stuff.
He did.
Throughout his 20s. Yeah. That's a hard time to do that.
Yes.
And now he's writing incredible music, so he, you know.
Yeah, and I really hope this does well, because... it's annoying when you see an artist that's so talented sort of get diminishing returns. And because I was on board more or less from the get-go, I've kind of watched this unfold in real time where, you know, if you look at his Spotify, you've got like Black and Gold, which again is a great song, but it's really not very representative of the artist. But anyway, has like roughly sort of maybe 40 million combined plays, and like the rest of the discography sort of pales in comparison. This album was self-released, I believe, or was... I think it was self-released, and it's getting a proper physical release and everything like that, and he's doing a bit of press on it, but it's not being pushed in the same way as even his second record. And I really hope that it does do well and it does become available, for example, over here.
I think I saw it here.
Did you? Okay, great.
I think
I might pick this up
somewhere. I remember just seeing it.
Yeah,
I'll get that later.
Because Sam Sparrow, he's not just a music artist, but he's also a visual artist. He's also a fucking incredible producer.
So much effort is put into
this. Yeah, so much effort was put into this in terms of making it. You know, there's a tape version that's done lovingly as a tape would have been done in the 90s. You know, the album artwork, the design, everything about it
could be a thesis on that era of music, almost, yes. Right?
Very much so. Yeah. And, in a way that, like, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of artists that we've covered even recently have kind of had their own take on the vaporwave genre, whereas this feels more like a really genuine throwback to the genre that vaporwave is lampooning, almost.
I'd say sort of, like...
You could take these songs, slow them down, crunch them up, stretch them out, and they would be vaporwave, you know?
Yeah, and also... Discovery era Daft Punk.
Discovery era Daft Punk, for sure.
I'm pretty sure he likes Daft Punk.
Yeah. Oh, no question. Doubt. Yeah, no question. No, there's a lot here, and I think, you know, he's a lot better than people give him credit for. I would hate to think that he would ever be dismissed as a one hit wonder or a curio or something. It's not fair, because he's got so much to offer, and he's already offered so much beyond what people maybe perceive of him as an artist. So I do wish Sam Sparrow all the best, and it's great to have him back in an album,
in an exciting way.
Yeah,
not just another album way. This is like a whole new thing.
Yeah, and I think I'm kind of, the more I listen to it, the more I understand the intention of it. Whereas at first,
so it's growing on you a bit more.
It's certainly, it grows on me every time. Yeah, I've probably listened to it maybe 6 or 7 times at this point.
Good album to wake up to, right?
Yeah, yeah, and it's a great album in kind of any company, because there's a ton of variety. It's obviously been written as a piece of art from start to finish, but each song could be a single, you know, that kind of way. So it's definitely enough to keep somebody's attention all the way through.
Eye to Eye is another great one.
Yeah, Eye to Eye is great. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. Good. And it's even got that's the one that has the hair metal solo and also the hoo.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, fine.
it's one of the more sad sounding ones, but it's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he's got some great, you know, just little bits of syncopation, you know, that if we could understand each other, you're like, oh yeah, yeah, that's
yeah, that's Phil Collins, right? It's very Phil Collins.
Yeah, for sure. Again, my crop of
syllabic,
my crop of artists to draw is not as deep as it would be with other genres, but yeah, it's I definitely hear bits of that. It's really good.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, what's your favorite track?
God, it's probably, let me just check here. I think it's Pressure.
Oh yeah,
Pressure. Out of all of them,
Really hits it off. Yeah, got the feeling. Bat the bat. Really catchy, great. It just partly because I love, you know, the sexy Moldovan sax man.
Yeah.
From Eurovision. Bah, 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 bah. There's a very reminiscent sax line in The People.
There is. Oh, I love that part.
And I'm such a sucker for a sax loop. I think that song is an absolute banger. Yeah. And I love it. So
it's fun getting into something that you wouldn't normally tackle, right?
Yes, and it is. And it is. And I would probably put like Marvelous Lover at a very, very close second. Yeah. So it's not, I just think it's really good. Again, it's from a genre that I'm less au fait with, but it's clearly really good work, so I'm gonna give it an 8.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 9. Nice. Close to 10 even.
Oh wow, okay,
could easily be right.
Yeah absolutely. I think yeah, that's the thing. If you were talking to a maybe a slightly older version of me, I probably would have gone, oh my god, it's a 9 or a 10. Yeah.
I think for me, Save a Life and The People just scrape by to being pretty good.
Right? Okay,
but the rest is incredible.
Yeah,
so that's why.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, Bow would be the moment where Bow and Outside the Blue, it's cool, it's kind of slowcore, but that'd be the moment where I kind of go, but it's start to finish, it's a really good piece of work. So it's a 8 for me and a 9 from Dill for Boombox Eternal.
And the aesthetic for just the covers and artwork is great.
Yeah.
Like the single stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Dropping in the little bits of home movies and stuff like that has a lot of care and intention.
The single for everything.
Yeah.
Or even, I think it's the video. Oh, the thumbnail is just kind of like an open cassette.
Oh, nice.
For a videotape.
Okay.
Just a movie. That's great.
Great stuff. Sam Sparrow, Boombox Eternal. Check it out. For sure, you'll have a nice time.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up, let's talk about Tycho, a.k.a. Scott Hansen, from Sacramento, California.
Yes. And or San Francisco, depending where he's writing from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, California, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The album is called Simulcast. Simulcast?
Yeah.
I guess one of the other
people. I won't judge.
Shoot your shot, take a pick. It's a companion piece. As I discovered maybe 4 listens in, it's a companion piece to his Grammy winning, right?
I don't know.
Album Weather?
Oh, yeah.
I think he won the Grammy.
Yeah.
So he had an album out last year called Weather, which.
Co-written with Saint Sinner.
Co-written with Saint Sinner, exactly.
He's a lyricist.
And the album was largely a sort of electronic vocal album with Tycho. And I'm just trying to look and see if he actually won. Did he win? No, he didn't. But he was nominated. Yes, he was. Nominated. Grammy nominated. So that album was in the general Tycho sense of sort of semi-organic, semi-electronic ambient washes of chill wave, I guess, but with singing.
Yeah, it was more poppy.
Yeah.
More poppy songwriting.
And I had actually been recommended this record, and I did listen to it maybe once last year.
The Weather, yeah.
And then when you suggested Simulcast, I didn't make the connection. It took me a while to make the connection. And then eventually I did that. This is what he's calling an instrumental reimagining of Weather.
Mm-hmm. It's clever, I think.
Yeah, it's like a jumbled up track list. Are there any tracks that weren't included? No,
there's 2 tracks that are carried on from Weather, I think. No, 2 or 3.
I think he's changed the titles, but I think nearly every track that featured on Weather features here in some
Weather form. Weather, Into the Woods, and Stress are the same, I think. I have to check, but
no, like for easy. Example, Japan has a different name on the it's confusing. You have to actually A-B it, but yeah, I think
they hit quite differently.
that's the reason they don't even though they're similar, the music tracks are very similar and they're probably drawn from the same stems, because there's no vocal lines and because a lot of the song titles are different, it can be a little bit confusing. But Simulcast is a companion piece to Weather, and having heard them both now, I would argue it is a superior album.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the talking point to begin with.
This common, we're talking Simulcast being the
superior one. I think Simulcast is the superior record. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's sort of back to basics, but it evolves. It incorporates slightly different things. I mean, the wall is pretty high, but
right
to change up this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but it's very pleasant.
Right. I just think it's intensely pleasant. Yeah. I mean, this is not what I was expecting. I was really more expecting a sort of John Hopkins, maybe like almost sort of Brian Eno style, like very ambient and totally electronic album. And that's not really what you get at all. I think what you get is much closer to something like God is an Astronaut or Portico Quartet, mm-hmm. or even L-1011. Like
L-1011, surely.
Yeah. Like this definitely feels like a band. I know it's just the one guy, but the drums feel really organic and natural. Yeah. There's tons and tons of electric and acoustic guitar.
An unjust criticism I've seen online was that it just sounds like a lo-fi radio thing.
Like lo-fi hip-hop beats to relax / study to?
Sort of. Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's got bits of that, but I think it's a whole lot more.
It's a whole lot more. I think that's a very...
It really feels. It's not just that's a very 20. Passive.
Yeah, that's a very 2020 lazy criticism, to level at something.
But that's like one of the first reviews I saw online. I was like, fuck off.
Yeah, I think it was... Was that Pitchfork?
I don't know.
Pitchfork had a very snooty...
I just wanted to make sure.
Had a very snooty review of this. And I think it's easy to sort of... to shit on music like this without really listening to it, to sort of just get the general vibe of it and sort of think, oh yeah, cool, I can just dismiss this out of hand. But actually, if you really listen to it, there's a ton of layers here, and the balancing of the organic and the electric elements is really smart. And then, for example, on Into the Woods, you've got that these kind of raindrop synths and the melody line,
jungly looping stuff.
Yeah, even though it feels like a texture and an atmosphere, it's also super super catchy, and you'll be going around in your head like going, you know, but again, it's very natural and it's very atmospheric, which is awesome. He kind of can veer even towards like Aphex Twin on certain tracks, like Easy.
Mm-hmm. PHC.
Really synth wavy vibes on PCH, you're dead right, that mm-hmm. song.
Yeah.
And then there's this, I think it's, what's the track after PCH?
Cypress. It's a little up-tempo, right?
There's like a weird ambient like texture that really reminds you of RT2 circa like 2003.
Yeah.
Do you know the one? It sounds like a show that I used to watch on like Irish cable television.
Like Blue Peter or something?
There's some weird thing, but if you recognize it, if it's a BBC show or something, but it very much reminds me of something on national television circa 2003.
It's oddly aquatic as well.
Yes.
In the sense that it just sounds very like shimmering.
Yeah.
And of course, he's a surfer.
Oh, is he?
So that explains a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah, I can hear that too, for sure.
It's what you want to play when you hear what you do as a hobby, right?
Yeah, of course. I just think this is lovely. I mean, it's not easy to write this kind of music that can work really well in the background, but also once you actually pay attention and listen to it, has tons more to offer, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, that track Outer Sunset almost sort of reminded me of a very, very lo-fi ambient version of like Cloudcore, like that Built the Sky, Pliny, C2I. Oh,
I mean, he knows how to structure stuff.
He really does, yeah.
As opposed to like lo-fi where it just goes on for the sake of it. This has payoffs. It knows when to build later on. Knows when to bring back stuff and make things a little more exciting in kind of subtle ways.
Yes.
Which this is totally that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and it's his sixth record, so I suppose you know he's had plenty of practice.
To
hone his craft. But I will say that in retrospect, and with all due respect to Saint Sinner, for some reason, I do feel like the vocals, there are fragments of them here, just fragments, almost suggestions of them on simulcast. But when they're turned into actual songs, I think it almost makes the music a bit more bland or something. It genrefies it in a way that I think it's not warranted when you listen to the instrumental version.
It may have been the intent to make it sound more approachable in a live setting.
Mm.
People would be like, oh, that guy's a vocalist, I'm going to listen to him, instead of...
Yeah,
just instrumentals, which is more exciting in my mind.
Yeah,
I totally go for that, but most people might.
I know what you're saying, but I don't mean to. I enjoy the vocal versions, but I just think
I don't really.
I don't enjoy them as much as this at all.
This is like,
it almost feels like something's getting in the way.
This is best work since Awake, which was 2014, so it's been quite a while.
Right.
Since something this exciting.
So what? Like, so how long have you been on the Tycho train?
Since the start of college, right? Oh, okay, so it's been a while.
Yeah. Okay.
7-8 years.
Yeah, because it's a name that I'd always heard in the ambience, but I'd never actually gone in on Tycho, which is ridiculous because it's great stuff. And if you like Air and Boards of Canada and Aphex Twin,
or Bits of Enemies, even the last album,
yeah,
kind of this guitar work going on.
Yeah, if you like all that stuff, there's no reason you won't like Tycho. He's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Enemy is not quite. It's not math rock. More so, there's elements.
Enemies, yeah. Well, Enemies is a little bit quieter and cleaner than most. I've put Enemies more in the same camp as like the Redneck Manifesto or something.
I mean, for this isn't math rock.
Oh God, no! This isn't even rock.
Kind of that.
But
it has that mind, right?
But there are certain moments where I sort of think this could be God as an Astronaut.
Oh, it's so close,
because it's got that lovely, that kind of groove drumming, which God as an Astronaut do, and the synth ambience and everything.
High tempo synths, but kind of keeping it low to mid tempo. That makes it kind of nice balance of chill.
Definitely, yeah. It's a far cry from lo-fi hip hop beats to relax our study to, because a lot of it has a driving kind of rhythm to it. You know,
I mean, it's just as cathartic, if not more.
Yeah, I think Portico Quartet is a good touch point, actually, because that definitely feels like it has a similar kind of beating heart at the center of it as Portico Quartet, even though that's obviously a fully kind of, what would you say, a fully kind of acoustic project, whereas this is a mostly electronic project, but done with the intent of maybe sounding more natural. So
yeah, pulls it off waves.
Definitely, I totally agree. What's your favorite track?
Favorite track? I think it's Stress.
Yeah.
The last song.
Stress is nice.
Stress or Cypress. They connect quite well. It all does. It all flows so nicely.
Yeah, definitely. I'll take Into the Woods.
Yeah.
Love that song.
It's hard to rate this. Because it's just high. It's up there.
Yeah. I think it's a little hard to rate this genre because I feel like it's because you're always trying to score stuff within obviously its own sphere of musical influence, so it feels weird because I think this, for me, this is an easy eight,
yeah.
Whereas it was very hard for me to give the Sam Sparrow an 8 because it's not necessarily a style of music that I gravitate towards in the way that this is. It's much easier for somebody to get an 8 in this style of music, but I still think it is an 8.
I mean, I think Tycho has more to throw into the pot.
Yeah, sure.
I think Yeah.
Eight, okay, great. Yeah. So that's Simulcast by Tycho. Definitely check it out, and check out Weather. Maybe you might prefer it if vocals are your thing, but as we've sort of...
Props for like bringing other things in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a very, very worthwhile endeavor. In a way that I on the one hand, I'm slightly sad that Moll decided to release an instrumental version of Yord, because I think the vocals are such a key intrinsic part of that record, and the instrumental version almost feels like the training wheels. This is the total opposite. I almost feel like the original vocal version feels like the kind of the training wheels version, and the instrumental is like when you can actually see the full picture of what he was trying to achieve musically with this record. So
sort of Bibio as well.
A little bit of Bibio, sure.
I'd love to see, I don't know if it's impossible, but I'd love to see Tycho get Stranger.
Hopefully.
Well, that's kind of a hard thing to do when you're being this blissful, right?
Well but I love Bibio has shown that it can be done.
Yeah,
so.
Like Into the Woods has some odd bits and
Yeah, definitely. I think there's more to him than he's being given credit for, put it that way. So that's Tycho, and the album's called Simulcast. Nice. So, last new release of the week is called Heroics. It's by a band called Vasa. I presume that's how you say it.
Where do they hail from?
From Glasgow.
Oh my god.
In bonnie wee Scotland.
Yes.
It's their second record. I'll confess I have not heard their first. Have you?
No.
Okay, great.
I'm ashamed as well.
I would like to listen to it for a bit of context. Just to kind of maybe put you in the mind frame of where we're going with this record.
It's a sophomore record.
It's a sophomore record. They're artists we like from Facebook. This Will Destroy You, Explosions in the Sky, And So I Watched You From Afar, Light, Adebisi Shank, Godspeed You Black Emperor, Maybe She Will, Enemies, Battles, and Sigur Rós.
And they're mates with Bicurious. So that's where I got them from.
Mates with Bicurious. And this album was produced by Tom from what band?
Alpha Male Tea Party. Sorry, that's where I got them from. Not Bicurious, Alpha Male.
Okay, sure. My bad. Sure. Bicurious, though, Irish band that sits vaguely in the space, right?
It is.
So just that's hopefully to give you an idea that this is a band that would sit, like, if there was an arctangent diagram, this band would sit like right slap dab in the center. They are very much sort of high octane instrumental
unpack,
rock.
Right?
A lot to unpack, yes. I'm just super curious because I have thoughts on this. I'm really curious what yours are. I know you pushed to bring this in, so I really want to hear what you thought. Yeah,
I was like,
was it Everything Is Golden? Was that the song?
It was Voices.
Oh,
or not Voices. Heroics. I mean,
okay, the title track. Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. Okay, yeah, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, Heroics. If you want to start there, I think wouldn't exist if Larkay was not a thing from Adebisi Shank.
Oh god, no. It's that's a good thing though. I like that this genre is explored more. I like they bring their own little touches into it as well. Flourishes of My Bloody Valentine guitars, that whirling bendiness.
That it's
brief.
The start of that
it's
song.
It's brief,
yeah.
But it's not just the start of the song. It comes in flashes in this.
It does.
And they don't totally abandon that, which is nice to hear. Because I hate a lot of shoegaze, but I like it when it's combined with other stuff. And this is certainly other stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'd say shoegaze comprises maybe 3% of this record, if.
Shoegaze is broad, right? It's fucking broad. Well, it can be, right?
Yeah, I mean,
done well, it can be.
Yeah, I agree, though. There are definitely flashes of something that I haven't heard before. At the end of that track, Heroics, like, there's that sort of really kind of driving halftime section, which definitely feels like something I haven't heard that many times before, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, and the guitar hail bright futures era Asuifa, kind of, it's got the tropical feel, which I know you don't like too much from that era, but this is a different kind of
They're incorporating it in different contexts.
This is a heavier affair.
Right. Yeah, generally speaking, it is. Yeah. Well, it's just produced so well. I mean, I have to give a real special shout out to Tom Peters from Alpha Male Tea Party, because
there's so much going on.
The drums in particular just sound absolutely gorgeous, and they're really, really wide. So anytime there's like any kind of work going on the toms, yeah. Like it's whatever else about it, I think it's one of the best sounding instrumental rock records I can think of. It really sounds phenomenal.
Yeah. I'd almost say I like the sound of this as much as Asuifa's latest one.
Yeah. And there are other comparisons to be drawn with the end of Shimmering too. Yeah, it probably is slightly better produced, but then I don't really know, because I feel like The Endless Shimmering is so much its own thing.
It is, yeah.
But I think this album is attempting to achieve a similar goal in terms of, if you judging by the track listing and the way the album progresses, I think they're trying to tell the story of a life from kind of childhood through to old age.
Adolescence to adulthood. They're kind of the mid sections.
Yes, so you've got like childhood, Everything Is Golden, adolescence, adulthood, expectations, settled. That's kind of the way the running order goes. And I think it's in terms of telling that kind of a nuanced story through instrumental rock music, I do think The Endless Shimmering maybe achieved it slightly better.
Yeah, for this I had to look at the song titles to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
With Asuifa, I kind of got it.
Yeah.
I got the feel. With I'll Share a Life, that definitely felt like something loved and close and nostalgic. There's so much going on. I don't even know if a song title could
yeah
sum them up.
And there are, you know, I can definitely hear it, there's elements of what they're going for in every, like, childhood does sound, well, extremely And So From Afar, but like, you know, it does sound optimistic, and as you move into adolescence, it's more kind of troubled and tumultuous, and
yeah, it's very on the nose, but
yeah. And then yeah, and like, and obviously then, you know, Settle, it kind of finishes with a, you know, a big sort of grand end credits kind of sequence, so I can see how they go through that, those motions of the themes, which it does generally, yeah,
very,
speaking, it
very
works.
Interesting for four people,
I think it's five,
for five people,
no, four, yeah. Four, two for guitars, bass and drums,
for a group of guys to just express what they think of of like the steps in life in an instrumental sense.
Yes,
because everybody experiences it different.
Mm-hmm. And presumably none of them have lived to the grand old age of, you know, 70 or 80, so
no, they're around our ballpark,
yeah, seems. Exactly, they're young, and it's I think And So Much Before have more life experience, yes, to draw on, and I hate to keep on comparing them, but really I do feel like this band wouldn't exist without Asa Wifa, Adebisi Shank, and Alpha Male Tea Party. Like those three are the three.
No, I mean, we're not saying it's a bad thing. It isn't a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing, because it's not a bad thing in one sense, because I think those influences are generally speaking well blended, and generally speaking offer something kind of reasonably original.
Yeah, Fireworks that carry the torch for, right?
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I mean, we love those bands too. But what I would say is I just feel like at this point, as a sophomore record, uh-huh, I hear so much promise in Vasa, and there's so much on this album that I really, really like.
Some of the yeah, hard rock stuff.
Yeah, and there's chugs, and
they get yeah, almost Metallica.
Yeah, what's the track?
The later ones, right?
I think there's a gallop. There's a real heavy metal gallop, yeah, to one of the songs.
Prom Night? No, one of the later ones.
No, it's Everything Is Gold, and has that dun, sure, dun, 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 dun. Yeah, it's, and there's, and then there's full on sort of blast beats towards the end, and yeah, Expectations.
I think this album gets better as it goes.
Yeah,
I like the last half a bit more.
It gets, it's for me, it's moments all throughout. But I do, yeah, I agree. I think it gets more original the further it goes.
Yeah,
I
some
totally
parts
agree.
I genuinely like without flinching at references.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think there's a really cool that that almost like Phantom of the Opera style thing on Adolescence is really cool.
Yeah, I know it exactly.
You know the part.
I know exactly.
You know the part. And there's some really cool, almost sort of haunting, detuned, whammy stuff going on, yeah, in adulthood, which is very, which is awesome as well. I like when this band go a little bit harder edged, a little bit darker, a little bit more somber, which is obviously going to be the second half, because adulthood
that's
is
the
sad.
That's the Alpha Male Tea Party shown.
Yes, a right. Bit, yeah. The main Alpha Male influence that I hear is the down, 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 down. You know, the kind of reverbed out.
Shimmering
double tracked part of Everything Is Gold, and that's where I mainly hear, yeah, them. But in the, you know, like that's definitely very Alpha Male as well, those kind of,
yeah,
weird rhythm picking and weird rhythm chugging.
Yeah, there's some parts where I think they maybe one of the last songs, but they almost try too hard to be complex with the riffing.
Yeah, potentially.
There's one part where everything's going at full blast and the guitar is just doing this odd time signature thing where it almost seems like it's not connecting.
Yeah.
As well as it could.
There's also
it has to keep up with everything. So
I think that's, I think you're thinking of Victoria.
Yes.
Yeah. There's also a bit in that which always made me turn around because I thought I was being beeped up by a car horn.
Oh my god.
It's do you know what it is?
And I was in Dunleary, so I was like, of course it could be.
Yeah. I was in like,
of course somebody could be driving on the path.
I was like walking around town and I was like, ooh, right. No, but it's that rising kettle whistling that you might remember from Contact by you remember Daft Punk, which finishes with that.
I know the one,
and it's like that kind of
infinite rotation.
Yeah,
I love those synths.
Yeah. Well, it's like that cycling in and out, and every time it does, I sort of think someone's beeping a car horn at me.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit too much going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I found that kind of effect on my new synth Mac, and I'd be like, oh my god, it's so much fun. So I can understand why you have that use it a lot.
For sure, for sure. Overall, I think what we have here is an album that sounds absolutely glorious, that draws from a ton of bands, all of whom are amazing.
Really fucking exciting.
Really exciting. I hate to say this because I sort of think, oh my God, this is like what they've worked on for the last 2 or 3 years. And you can't just sort of say, I can't wait to hear what they do next. But really and truly, I hear so many parts of this where I think, wow, that's really a band who have taken their influences and blended them into something that sounds unique and original. And then there are as many parts where I think this is a really good homage to a particular band that I'm thinking of. And that's a tiny bit distracting.
Yeah,
for me. In such an insular genre, I guess.
Yeah, I've seen it done a little more on the nose.
Like I thought, Memory of Elephants from last year was a little bit more on the nose in its Asawifa.
Chancer was a bit on the nose. Familiar Salads kind of.
I remember. Yeah. I remember them. You're right. And speaking of Asawifa worship, I think, you know, Bagels, or what do they search, they literally call themselves Search Party Animal. Actually, they changed their name to an Asawifa song name. You know, if your biggest influence, don't name your band after them. One of your biggest influences songs.
I remember I was quite aggravated when I saw them.
And I think it's great that an instrumental band from Northern Ireland, who have never really, I don't think, made any concessions.
We're a very insular genre inspired by a tiny island.
Yes.
So, like,
yeah, but I think this band is obviously super, super, super talented, and I want them to stick around, and I really hope they do very well with this record.
Seems it.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your favorite track?
That's a tough one, dude. Prom Night.
Yeah, Prom Night's cool.
It gets real cool in the mid-half.
Yeah, definitely. I think I will take... Minibus, please.
Nice. Minibus is fun. It's a hard hitting one.
It is. Reminds me of You Slut, which were a cool band for a while. Really, really good.
Yeah, I'm giving this a 7. Good 7, right?
Oh, good 7. I would totally agree.
Come back to this. I'll try and understand it a bit more. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I think it's like it's a very encouraging go forth and conquer 7. Like, this is good. We know you can be fantastic. Like, this band definitely have a 9 in them, no question. Like, they've got all the moving parts, just a slightly different set of songs,
possibly.
So that's Heroics by a band called Vasa, V-A-S-A, if you want to check them out. They're from Glasgow, and if you like any of the bands that we mentioned in this review, you probably will enjoy them. They're really good. It concludes the review section, the album review section of the podcast, and then we're going to move into our Road to Sunstroke 2020 section. Sunstroke Festival. I was actually at the launch of Sunstroke last week. I got a nice fat bruise on my head because I headbanged a monitor during a fan club's secret set.
Glad you're not as bald as you have been in the past.
Or it could have really caused some issues. Now you see it there.
Yeah,
it's kind of still showing up a little bit. It was a fun night. I should have talked about it in the gig section, but anyway, we'll talk about it now because we're talking about Sunstroke. MCD put on a really nice spread for us. There was a few bands who were playing on the lineup. Paranoid Visions, who I don't feel like I got a great sense from their set, but could be interesting. And then Dead Label, who just play really great chuggy boots and braces like metalcore.
Yes.
And he got a wall of death going in a
tiny place,
in a tiny pub with maybe 60 people there.
It's the Irish way.
Impressive. It's the Irish way. Really treated it like it was any other show, and I appreciated that. And Fan Club, as usual, were great. I sort of goaded them into playing a third song. Or at least I'll take credit for it, when they were only supposed to play 2. So that was great, and it was great to see the festival getting a good sort of launching pad. And as far as I know, the day passes are gone at this point. Tickets down on your own bat are gone, so it's all camping now. Why wouldn't you camp? Camping is more fun.
Yeah, there are a few reasons, but yeah, go for it.
So we've spoken about the lineup before. It's really exciting. You've got Mastodon, Deftones, Faith No More, Sepultura, Killing Joke, that goes all the way down to like smaller bands that we love, like While She Sleeps, Poppy, who we covered on the show this year, Curb Dog, etc. We've gone through the line Loathe as well, Vekovi, which is really exciting. Vekovi, my God,
be the first.
It's gonna be fun, let me tell you. It is gonna be a lot of fun, and that is on the 13th and 14th of June, so we are fast approaching, actually. I wonder how many more of these we have. Probably only about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So this week we have chosen to cover the 2008 album The Way of All Flesh by subheadliners Gojira. It's their fourth album as Gojira, but their fourth of six as Gojira, but fourth of ten if you count the four albums they did as Godzilla.
Goddamn.
Yeah, so, you know, they've been around for a hot minute. They've been around since 1996, from Bayonne, France.
Yeah, just had to spell that correctly, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I think cease and desists, possibly, or... You know,
maybe
anytime you name your band after a brand name.
Well, Gojira is the actual
pronunciation, maybe, in Japan.
The katakana.
But you can't. I mean, the English, the G O J I R A, I suppose, isn't copyrighted in the same way.
Yeah.
And a similar thing happened to Owen Pallett, of course, who had to stop using the Final Fantasy name because cease and desist from Square, I guess.
Oh, Square buckle down on people.
They're litigious. So the Duplantiers, Joe and Mario, along with Christian Adreux and Jean-Michel Labadie, make up the band, at least at this point in their career. It's a long album.
It's a meaty
hour with it's an hour 15 if you include the hidden track. So it's probably more like an hour 10 of music with the 5 minute silence in the middle or towards the end, so there's a lot to sink your teeth into. I don't know how you felt about this, but I felt like it was a daunting task that became more and more enjoyable the more I came back to it.
Made me understand their early stuff a lot more. I think it's incredibly well polished album, without sounding generic.
Yeah.
Like the guitars are not too heavy. They're not too light. They're not overbearing, even though it's a very heavy album.
Yeah.
That makes me be able to pick and choose kind of what I like about it.
Yeah, they're not hiding behind...
It's not the Meshuggah noise.
No.
But it's inspired somewhat.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But I think Joe Duplantier, fair play, like, he's produced everything the band has done, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Some co-producing credits, but generally speaking, like, he produced this all by himself and he does all the artwork. And in that sense, maybe he's a little bit of a... I forgot the Converge guy's name again. Jacob from Converge. And who's somebody else we talked about recently does all of the... Conrad from Trail of Dead.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a renaissance man, and he's a phenomenal producer. I don't know if he's worked on anything apart from Gojira stuff, but like you said, every element is totally...
It's just there.
There.
Right.
Super audible. There's no false sort of obfuscation of the sound that you sometimes get with metal, where something might sound heavy, but it's only because it's muddy and you can't hear what's going on.
Yeah. That's usually... not a form of laziness, we're just trying to be balls out.
Yeah.
Right. This has some control.
Surgically precise. Yeah. Everything about it is really precise. And I think Mario's drumming is absolutely just pummeling throughout.
I'd say that's my favorite bit.
The drumming is amazing. Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. I think the bass as well, the bass tone, like everything about the tone of this record it absolutely hits. The guitar has more than enough wallop and impact while still being super crisp and clean and audible. The drums, like you say, pack a punch, but are super audible.
Yeah, I mean, compared to like the latest Magma, which was very, it was up there, but it was washed in reverb.
A little bit more, but more atmospheric, I guess.
Yeah,
they were going for a different feel, and I put Magma in an interesting context listening to this.
Yeah, this starts with not that.
Oh my God, yeah.
Totally like as clean as reverb as you could imagine.
Yes, exactly. Ouroboros literally just crashes in with this mad creative use of like hammer-on pull-offs on the guitar. Like there's a lot of that on this record, which I don't hear very often. That kind of like...
Not anymore,
like that really, really fast hammer-on picking. There's enough melody throughout, I think, to kind of keep the ear engaged. Mm-hmm. It's not all atonal and dissonant. Like Joe Duplantier, he does have a scream, but But well, he also does a lot of pitched, like, closer to singing. You know, he'd be like...
Yeah, the pitch.
No, 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 like, where there's a note involved.
Yeah, the pitch singing helps. Me, keep me interested.
Yes. Know. He's got a super unique voice, too, I think.
He does. It doesn't sound like
anybody else. It's very interesting hearing...
Close to Macedon, I'd say. Some of the members of Macedon are in that...
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe a little bit of the sort of slightly idiosyncratic, like... when Corey Taylor is at his most frantic on Art of Dying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting hearing him tag team with Randy Blythe on, is it Adoration for None?
Yes.
Because, Randy Blythe from Lamb of God is on that track, and you can really hear the difference between the two styles of
it's
screaming.
It's like night and day, yeah.
Yeah, it really is, yeah. And it's funny as well because he gets the title track line, Randy Blythe does.
That's odd.
He says the way of all flesh, which is funny.
I think I like that. I don't love that.
That track,
yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
I think this album is made up of tracks that are absolutely essential. Like the opening run of Ouroboros, Toxic Garbage Island, which has this fantastic, almost sort of Dillinger-esque, like, stop-start.
It is 100% Dillinger, yeah.
Yeah. Like, but Dillinger goes metal, you know?
Yeah.
Riff and... It's just phenomenal, right? So you've got that, and then it kind of moves into Sight to Behold, which has that really fantastic hip swinging groove and an almost Rammstein esque verse. Sounds like an alien landing and speaking to the Earthlings or something.
It really does. It's very alien sounding, this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just a French album, a French metal album. So
yeah,
I don't know what take that. Means like what is it?
I was thinking about that as well. Like, what I was, yeah, because all
like
the
how
time
does it differentiate it from
it really does
culturally. Like, is there an? I think there's something that's slightly different.
It definitely sounds like an album that couldn't have been made by an American band or a British band or an Australian band. And I think part of that is it's something not necessarily obviously French, but there's some hint of melody and romance lurking just like deep buried in the subconscious of this, where even though it's crushingly heavy, it very rarely gets overwhelming, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
There's always a hint of something waiting around the corner, like on Yama's Messengers. They kind of have like these really shoegazy voiced chords that are interspersed with the riffs and the chugging, and that comes back again on the last track.
When it comes to song title conventions, name conventions, these are incredible.
Yeah.
Toxic Garbage Island is one of the most metal songs I could hear.
Plastic Bag in the Sea! great.
It's great, yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah, Esoteric Surgery is cool as well. That one really like brought me into the mindset of like early soul work or At the Gates.
Sure.
And they have a lot of that. There's two drumming conventions on this album that I enjoy. Like, it's the sort of Gothenburg, like... where you lock the kick in with the chugs, and then also that fun, again, it's kind of a melodic death thing, it's kind of a death metal thing, where you have the double kick drum going and you hit the snare every second beat, so it's like so you get this lumbering halftime beat that still feels really intense because the double kick drum is going the whole time.
Yeah, Behemoth do it well. So these guys.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like Meshuggah. This has been referred to vaguely as sort of groove metal in places, progressive death metal in other places, and I hear both, but then I don't hear either. In parts, it really depends on what section. Like, there's a lot of thrash on this, there's a lot of pure death on this, there's a lot of black metal on this.
There's a lot of like lightness from, oh fuck, who's that band?
Opeth?
No, yes, good call. but the one you like? It's kind of very bleak, solemn kind of.
A Leprous?
Leprous, yeah.
Oh yeah, maybe a little
maybe
bit.
The
sure,
guitars.
I didn't. That didn't Old occur to Leprous. Me, but. Yeah, Leprous at their absolute heaviest, I definitely hear. Just speaking of Opeth, that really long, hypnotic, almost sort of jazzy outro to The Art of Dying, which is the kind of the epic.
Exactly.
Definitely reminds me of one of those really long, extended outros from like Ghost Reveries or something by Opeth. Very cool. There's hints of sort of... cult elements and tribal elements and stuff like that throughout the album, which are cool, like reversed tapes and didgeridoos and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. I still don't know why they're called Gojira, but maybe that's... I'm always like, I hope this is like hilariously nerdy or somewhat...
To be honest with you, I wouldn't be shocked if it's as simple as our music sounds like a monster.
Yeah, just a whale, yeah. a whale gorilla.
Like, somewhat. It is a very similar naming convention to Mastodon, you know? It's like true. Giant, ancient creature... lumbering through the forest. Like, that's sort of what this is, in a way.
And it sounds it. Especially later on in their career, like Le Bon Sauvage.
Le Bon Sauvage, I really want to get more into, actually, because it's an album that I've seen performed live. I saw it at Metal Town 2012, I guess, which is when it would have been...
Definitely more conceptual.
Well, no! Or is it Grass Pop? Whenever it was just fresh out, I saw it.
2012.
Yeah, which makes sense, right? So I saw them on the second stage at Metal Town, and they were really, really good. I still don't know the album that well. But like, with this, having this as context, I'm excited to go back and
same.
Yeah,
I like the. I think I like them
and hear the midpoint between this and Magma.
Mm-hmm. The change, they do change. That's the thing. This album sounds a lot different than what's come out recently.
Yeah,
so they do change. I like that.
Oh my god! I mean,
like, kind of band.
I still, you know, there's nothing on this that's as catchy as is it Silvera that. I mean, that's like a pop song by comparison to most of this.
Certainly, yeah.
But then there is stuff on Magma that more harkens back to the crushing heaviness that's on show here. Crushing maybe to a fault over the course of an hour and 10 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, by the end, I am quite jaded and beaten to a bloody pulp.
Oh, same. As most metal is for my old achy breaky heart these days. But man, I can't wait to see them come back.
Yeah.
It's been 4 years since Magma.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess...
They must have a record coming out this year, right?
Yeah, I think they do it every 4 years is their album.
Yeah.
That's a long time to do this kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, they're a band that thrives in the live circuit, and they always have.
Mm-hmm.
And their stock has only risen, really, in the last sort of 4 years since Magma came out.
Yeah, I think they're basically headliners.
Oh yeah,
things, right.
I think Magma pushed them over the edge into that, where you have like two or three songs that are genuine, like the whole stadium can kind of sing along, that you can use to offset the Toxic Garbage Island stuff, where it's like people do want that. They do want to be pummeled, but every couple of songs they want to sing along too. So it's a good mix.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to see this live on a race course, a random off Kilda race course in Dublin.
Yeah, no, it's great. Super worthwhile endeavor, I think, to go back to this band, and it's really given me a lot of respect. And it sort of made me think, you know, what was stopping me from going in on Gojira this deep before? They're a really great band.
Yeah, it was the technical aspect that was always... scared me off a little bit.
But once you get to know your way around the songs, it's not as it's really not as daunting.
Certainly not.
Any final thoughts on The Way of All Flesh?
No, just I'm an actual fan now.
Yeah, me too. Me too, for sure. Yeah. Favorite track?
Ooh. Let me think. I think it would be A Sight to Behold.
Yeah. with the what would you call it? Not ET, but whatever that talk box thing is that's going on.
It's talk boxy, yeah.
It's or more so, like Cyberman or something.
Yeah.
It's
cool.
Very cool. No, it is. It's awesome. I'm a big fan of Esoteric Surgery, I gotta say.
You
have the power to heal yourself. That's good. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's a great one, because it has a super melodic lead riff as well, which is mainly kind of tremolo picked single notes, which I'm a big fan of that style.
Yeah,
really good.
I mean, for me, in regards to my preferences towards metal, it's hard to enjoy. It's hard to truly enjoy bands in metal that can be somewhat self-serious.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Where it's kind of like, they're playing off the mythologized version of what metal is and dark stuff. And Behemoth for me is that. I don't dig Behemoth too much.
Whereas, do you feel like this doesn't take itself quite as seriously?
I think it's still in there a little bit, but I enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah, I think it's maybe those elements that we think of as being very French that that separate this out from just being a very po-faced, serious metal record. I know exactly what you mean, and to be honest with you, a band that Behemoth, I don't really know all that well, but a band that I've tried to get into, and just I've always feel like it's just too glum and serious and reverent of like sort of classic metal is Machine Head.
That's the most self-serious band I know.
They're just so goddamn po-faced with everything they do, and it never really clicked for me.
Though I do like bits of their stuff, I can't deny. Beneath the Silt.
Yeah, bits, of course.
Yeah.
But I do like a band that can just throw a little bit of something different, and whether it's being able to poke fun at yourself or just have fun. Like Soulwork are a band that I think like
these are up there with
serious
that.
Metal, but they have fun with a lot of their tracks, and you can tell they're having a ball. Exactly. And it's like that's the kind of infectious energy that we all love in metal, and I appreciate that when I can hear it. So really worthwhile going back to Gojira, who will be playing at Sunstroke 2020 in June on Punchestown Racecourse. So thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Kill Shuffle. It's been fun.
It has been.
I have to speak for myself, but I'm glad to hear that you agree, Dylan. If you want to find us, we are available on Spotify. That's probably the easiest way to subscribe, is just follow us there. And you can also find our playlist where we bang all the tracks that we're going to be covering on the next show ahead of time. So you can sort of get a bit of a preview of what we'll be covering. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. DM us. We will have a conversation. It'll be good. And in the meantime, please just look after yourself.
Salam.
Yep. And wash your hands.